policy record, but apparently no major announcement on Vietnam. Outside the convention hall, anti-war demonstrations are underway. Bernard Shaw reports.
Several blocks from convention hall this evening, small bands of demonstrators are marauding in the streets. Perhaps you can hear the honking car horns in the background. What they're doing, they're throwing park benches and trash cans into the intersections, and many of them are running up to cars with sharp instruments in their hands, and they are puncturing tires. Unsuspecting motorists are being pounced on at many of these intersections. Just a short while ago, about six youths ran up to the back of a bus, pulled open the back section, and tried to reach for the distributing cap. And then when they failed to reach that, they ran around the side and started puncturing the tires of that bus. Overhead, Army helicopters are moving back and forth, and the police, the Miami Beach police, are trying to contend with these running gangs in the streets by zipping up and down the streets in their motorcycles. This is Bernard Shaw, CBS News, a few blocks from Convention Hall, Miami Beach.
WBBM News time now, 4:40. The expelled Rhodesian team spent the day wandering about the Olympic Village. Most of them hope to stay and watch the upcoming competition, which will begin on Sunday, but the Olympic Committee may ask them to leave their dormitory. Said one member of the team, "We came here with public funds, and that same public might object if we stayed here without competing." As for the competitors themselves, Jim Ryan called a news conference today, said he was finished with interviews until after the games. His rematch against Kip Keno in the 1500 meters will be one of the highlights of the games. Keno won at Mexico City, but was it because he was more used to the altitude, or is he a better performer than Ryan in big races? And that should be settled at Munich on September 9th. Ryan is stronger than he was back in 1964 when he failed to qualify for the finals in Tokyo because of the flu, and he is definitely stronger than he was in 1968 when he was still recovering from mononucleosis. One partial score on baseball now in. San Francisco leads Pittsburgh. The Giants are batting in the bottom of the seventh.
It's 15 minutes to 5. The First National Bank of Elgin is the only bank in Colombia on pair with every pair of single-vision contact lenses you buy. Or, if you wish, Elmer Co. will make two separate prescriptions, and you can team up with a friend or relative and share the cost. Stop in at Elmer Co. Get contact lenses for cosmetic beauty and in clear and Elmer Co. stores to serve you. Seven of these stores are in major shopping centers. Check the telephone book for the store nearest you, and be sure and visit their newest location at 330 South Michigan Avenue downtown. Remember, all Elmer Co. stores honor most major credit cards. Elmer Co., Chicago's oldest professional optician since 1886. When did you last have your eyes examined?
Just review a few thoughts from yesterday.
Boys and girls, high schoolers, teenagers, and they did a lot of good. And if they just kept this up, they're supposed to have this every year. and I hope they keep it going. Well, I hope it may go to Hawaii. Well, Nigel, what's the matter? Well, go on, turn it off.
Doctor and sex, a field which involves everyone, but one that many physicians fail to study with the objectivity it requires. This is Lou Adler.
Curette has put an end to the floppy bandage blues. You know, the bandage flops up, you press it down. It flops up, you press it down again all day long. But now Curette is made with a better sticking adhesive that even resists water and perspiration. In fact, you can take a steam bath without unsticking a Curette. Are Curette bandages still ouchless? Certainly, because they adhere only to the healthy skin around the wound, not to the wound itself. The injury is covered with another Curette exclusive, the Talpha Pad. And Talpha Pads lift away gently without pulling. So when you have to cover the cut, the hurt, the scrape, or the owie, cover it with a Curette, the ouchless bandage that stays on you until you decide to take it off. And by the way, the Curette adhesive is hypoallergenic, so it's kind to tender skin and does not leave a gummy residue behind. Get Curette with the better sticking adhesive in a variety of ouchless sizes and shapes at Walgreens, where you save with Walgreens discount wonder prices. This portion of News Radio 78 was sponsored by Walgreens. Questions on vitamins, beauty aids, camper supplies? Courteous Walgreens experts are happy to help. WBBM News Time, 140, 73 degrees in the Windy City.
Profile, Charles Osgood, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Didn't you always used to hate it when in the old movie and radio serials, they used to leave you with the hero hanging by his fingers from the edge of a cliff? That's where the word cliffhanger came from. Or maybe they'd have the heroine being tied to the railroad tracks. Well, today's story is one that happened in Overland Park, Kansas, where police got a frantic call the other day from a woman who said she had just seen four men tying a young woman to the Frisco railroad tracks. We'll continue right after this message.
Hot pancakes, spread a little butter, pour some maple syrup. Oh, that's 500 calories. If you're watching your weight, maybe you're cutting out the butter and the syrup. Maybe you're cutting out the pancakes, too. But don't cut out the vitamins they contain. Make sure you're getting these vitamins with Total Cereals. Both original and new corn total have more vitamins than any other cereals. Just 1 ounce has 100% of the minimum daily adult vitamin and iron requirements. If you're cutting calories, remember, Total watches your vitamins while you watch your weight.
An unlikely event, but all too real in Overland Park, Kansas. Four dastardly young men, cast no doubt in the mold of Snidely Whiplash, were tying this poor, defenseless young woman to the railroad tracks. The passerby could see them doing it. There was the victim, bound hand and foot, a gag stuffed into her mouth. Quick to the phone and a breathless description to the dispatcher of what she had seen. The dispatcher called the police, and within moments, Officer James J. Weaver of the Overland Park Police was on the scene. And sure enough, there they were. The girl, tied to the tracks, and one of the four men dressed exactly like the villain in one of those old-fashioned movies. Officer Weaver freed the girl and would have none of the explanation offered. He had never seen such out-and-out dastardly villain in all of his years on the force.
He hauled everybody to the police station. You can explain it there, he told them. A little later, at the police station, the men explained. It seems that they were making a home movie. Nothing worse than that. And the apparent damsel in distress was an 18-year-old friend of theirs who had volunteered to play the part of the damsel in distress. It was all a kind of practical joke. Said the desk sergeant, the joke is on you. And he charged them all with disorderly conduct. In the old serials, you will recall, there was always a kind of delayed shocker at the end, a trick ending, something the audience found out that was unbeknownst to the principals in the story. For while the would-be movie makers thought that they had...
Now, direct from CBS News, this special radio Net Alert news report.
Campaign 72. This is George Herman, CBS News election headquarters at Miami Beach. The military hospital plane bearing Governor George Wallace has landed at Miami International Airport. And down the ramp, a couple of strong men carried the wheelchair bearing the body of Governor Wallace. Governor Wallace has frequently reminded himself and reminded all of us, all of the newsmen around him, that Franklin D. Roosevelt also campaigned, unable to walk, largely from a wheelchair. However, the difference is so far that when Governor Roosevelt and then President Roosevelt campaigned, the news media were very careful to refrain from showing the wheelchair. So far, we have repeatedly seen Governor Wallace carried either in the wheelchair or from the wheelchair into a car. He is down the ramp now and meeting a group of well-wishers at the foot of the ramp from the plane, surrounded by them. Florida is a state in which Governor Wallace has proved to be extraordinarily popular. Florida is where he won his first great triumph in the primary races. Florida is the state which really got the governor's campaign underway. He had stopped briefly at Montgomery, Alabama on the way here to Florida, a stop which served several purposes. First of all, a technical and legal function. It made him once again the acting and official governor of his own state of Alabama. His continued absence at the hospital in Maryland outside of his own state had, under Alabama law, removed him from the actual chair, from the governorship, and had made Lieutenant Governor Jerry Beasley the acting governor until Governor Wallace should return to the state. So he put down at the airport in Montgomery, Alabama, visited there very briefly, made a speech. His chair was wheeled up onto a platform where a group of microphones and bunting awaited him, and there he made a speech in which he said that he was coming to Miami Beach to the convention of the Democrats to tell them that they can win if they will but present a platform which conforms to what the American people want. And then he proceeded to spell out in typical George Wallace fashion exactly what he thought the American people want. It was a version of his old familiar speech that he has given over and over again and which has brought him so much applause and so many votes as he has proceeded across the country. And he said, I'm going to insist that they adopt a platform which takes into consideration the desires of the people in this fashion. And then he outlined all his causes in which he is so interested, tax reform, school busing, a series of other reforms. He said twice that he was temporarily sidelined from the fight, or had been temporarily sidelined from the fight, but he wanted all his friends and admirers to know that it was merely a temporary sidelining, that he was still very much active and was still going to campaign very vigorously for what he believed in at the convention in Miami among the Democrats. Now, once again, the crowd around the governor is thinned out somewhat, and he is being wheeled forward. I can't quite make out who is wheeling him in this case. When he landed at Montgomery, it was Captain Dothard, the Alabama State Trooper, who was shot and injured with the governor in that incident. In that incident at Silver Spring. Now he's Silver Spring, Maryland. Now the governor is being wheeled along and is shaking hands. Mrs. Wallace walking along on one side of the wheelchair. And is making his way towards an area where perhaps he can be seen by my friend and colleague Charles Osgood, who is out at the airport. Charles, what?
Yes, we can see the governor, George. He's just now being taken up the ramp to the rostrum where a especially shortened podium awaits him. About 100 people who come here to welcome the governor, spectators, are behind a chain-link fence which is topped by barbed wire. They're waving at him and cheering, the governor waving back, smiling broadly, clapping back at them. Newsmen are standing behind a barricade. The rostrum on which the governor has been wheeled is covered with a red and white canopy. He may need that because it looks as if it's possible it might rain here. It's been very hot and sticky. This is an open area. There are no structures, no formal building structures in the area. All there is just this little sort of tent arrangement that has been made. There's a series of potted palms surrounding it. Right now, the governor, Governor Wallace, is talking with some of his aides about the rostrum itself. It appears to be just about the right height, but they're having some difficulty getting him in close enough to it so that he is able to talk into those microphones. They're making some adjustments to the governor's wheelchair so that he's able to get up. And he's now right at the microphones. That seems to be satisfactory. The band, dressed in red and white striped shirts. Here's the governor, Governor Wallace.
All of you distinguished Democrats who are here today, and all of you Floridians, that. Good to be back in Florida again.
And they see to it that the people can't pay back the loans. And before the businessmen know it, they've got the underworld as a partner. There have been many cases in which underworld figures have gotten into control of businesses and deliberately thrown them into bankruptcy. It sold off the assets of the company at cut prices just to milk every dollar they can out of it and then just let the company go broke.
How do you distinguish between these people, the mob, and the robber barons of the 19th century?
Interestingly enough, many of the organized crime leaders I interviewed said just that. They say, why do people pick on us and say, well, we are mafia figures, we're this and we're that. We're using the same techniques that we used a generation or two ago by the families that are now considered pillars of society. And
what did you tell them?
I said that I saw no difference between thievery committed by them and thievery committed by anybody else.
Do you find this a more insidious form of thievery, the modern-day mafia?
Well, I think the difference might well be the violence that has been used by mafia figures. The robber barons, as bad as they were not known to shoot down their enemies on the streets.
Some of them might have been out in the West, if you remember, in the early days. The reason that I'm laughing about this is because I'm nervous that I'm sitting here talking with you about it. Aren't you, really?
No, I'm not. This has been my line of work for quite some time, investigative reporting, and although there were some tight moments while I was researching the book.
Like what?
At one point, a federal investigator with whom I was cooperating and I both got word that there were contracts out on our lives because we had some very potentially embarrassing information. But a few weeks later, we heard that the contracts had been removed because it had been decided that anything done to us would be more damaging to the mob than just leaving us alone.
Listen, is there one guy up on top who calls the shots for all the families?
No, at this moment there is not. There, in the past, Vito Genovese was known as the boss of all bosses of the mafia, but at this time there is sort of a conglomerate running things.
They become modern even more than you would be willing to think. The reason that I sound as hesitant isn't exactly the word I want. The reason I sound so confused about all of this is that it seems to me only a couple of weeks ago, and for the life of me, I can't remember the name of the journalist that I saw. I know it wasn't Gay Talese, but I saw a journalist speak and heard him speak about the mafia, and you would have thought that it was like the old Chinese dragon dying easily away. I'm curious why major journalists, guys whose reputations are really first rate, could be bamboozled so easily.
I don't know, except that in some cases, I think some journalists do too much talking to the law enforcement people and not enough to the underworld people. Perhaps they can't get to them. And in some cases, a law enforcement man, to make his own record look good, will say, oh, well, we've got organized crime under control here in our area. It's going out of business. And some journalists may take their word for it. I don't.
I know now where I saw it. The show on television that had to do with the mafia, that was Luigi
Barzini
and the guy
Pileggi,
from New York Magazine, Nick Pileggi. I think both of them implied that, in fact, the fight in New York, the Gallo deaths, were the indication of the petering out of the mob.
I don't know why we should assume that. I think that in the old days, when there was a struggle for power within the mob, it was quite common for there to be underworld murders of this sort. I don't think the mob faded out of existence as a result of those earlier murders, and I see no reason why we should assume that it's fading out now.
As a matter of fact, you imply that they're getting even stronger.
I think they're getting stronger because they are becoming increasingly sophisticated and know how to cover their tracks better than they did in the past.
You know, one of the ironies of the conversation brought up, you mentioned before that the mafia makes contributions to fight communism. What's interesting is that communist states fight drug abuse and narcotics abuse with the same drive that we do here in this country, and yet the mafia would pay to fight the communists who would fight them on the drugs.
Interesting, yes. I've been asked before, why do communist countries not have organized crime as we know it? And I think one reason is that in those countries there are police states that just make it that much more difficult for any citizen to do anything in secret. So that the one of the penalties we pay for our democracy, I suppose, is organized crime.
Mr. Torman, what has happened about the Kennedy Airport cargo situation?
Well, there used to be wholesale thievery of cargo, mail, shipments, millions of dollars worth of stocks and bonds were stolen all the time out there in mail pouches. There has been a tightening up of security regulations out at the airport. They are much more careful these days about who can get into the cargo areas. It's still a problem, however, and the solution has not been found completely.
Is the mafia peculiar only to large cities, or is there a mafia in smaller towns, too?
Yes, there is. The biggest concentrations of mafia families are in the biggest cities in the country. However, there are quite a number of smaller cities and in some cases, even small towns where there are very active mafia operations. Sometimes the mafia will find a town, for example, with a cooperative law enforcement establishment where it can put in a gambling joint that may bring gamblers from hundreds of miles around. The largest concentrations, however, are in the big cities.
What do they do? Use minor league operatives in minor league cities?
Sometimes we'll take a young man who's breaking in, and it's sort of a farm system, yes. Work your way up.
Ship him down to the farm.
Protesters, their numbers still uncertain, plan acts of civil disobedience.
After a series of weird happenings where many hard charges dropped out, where Mario Andretti has a race bagged, then jammed his transmission with 35 laps to go, where both Joe Leonard and teammate Al Unser appeared in victory lane, the U.S. Auto Club said that Unser had won. The Parnelli Jones team thought Joe Leonard had won. After much head scratching, about an hour later, Joe Leonard was finally declared the winner at an average speed of 154.7 miles an hour, but Johnny Rutherford was declared second. More on this much confusion.
Few people who could.
New fresh WLS free shirts. Listen carefully.
This is the starting of the America.
Lead to emotional dependence. This community message is presented by Oliver's Pub at 630 West Lake Street in Aurora.
24 past 5 o'clock, the latest magazines, Town and Country Drugs, West Aurora Plaza.
Cheesecake by Lomax at 3 East Wilson in Batavia says drug abusers come from all social and economical environments. Help combat drug abuse through proper education. This message from Cheesecake by Lomax, a new business serving you with the world's finest cheesecake and home-cooked hot dogs in a distinctive old-world country setting. Open 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. daily, except Sunday. Stop in soon with your friends or family.
Your redemption draweth nigh just a little longer, and we'll meet him in the sky. The truth. Christ's second coming, like a silver thread of hope, runs through the entire Bible and culminates in that marvelous day when we'll see him face to face.
Hallelujah.
We shall rise. And even if you and I meet death in our lifetime, still we'll rise to meet him together in the air, and we'll be forever with the Lord. Now maybe there's someone listening today who wants to know, well, how do I know that I'm really born again? I don't have the assurance, maybe someone is saying, I don't really have the assurance of knowing Jesus Christ personally. How do I know it? How do I know that he's in my life? Well, in Revelation 3:20, Jesus painted a marvelous picture when he spoke and he said, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come into him and will sup with him and he with me." That word sup has to do with fellowship. That kind of fellowship that's close, that's intimate, that's a kind of fellowship that brings two people into a perfect relationship with each other, the kind of thing that presents to us in a picture, the kind of fellowship that we can have with our Lord Jesus Christ. He lives in us, and he becomes a part of our lives. God in the flesh, living our lives, or living his life through us. And he said, "I will come into him and will fellowship with him and he with me." And in John 1:12 we read, "But as many as received him," Jesus Christ, "to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believed on his name." That's the way you know Jesus Christ. That's the way you come to know him, through God, or to God through Christ, because Jesus Christ is the bridge between God and man. Well, that's the way, my friend. It's not a complicated thing. Yet there's a cost to you and me because Jesus Christ paid his life on that cross to ransom. And that's a good word, by the way, to ransom you and me from sin and to pay the penalty of sin, the curse that was upon us. And yet you and I can be freed, and we have been freed by the death of Jesus Christ on the cross, and the work was finished at that point. And then when Jesus Christ rose from the dead, he became a living Savior, living for all eternity. And some songwriter has said, you ask me how I know he lives. He lives within my heart.
Time
5:48. The British Army demolished the no-go Roman Catholic street barricades of Northern Ireland with 50-ton tanks today and said it had occupied every Irish Republican Army stronghold in the province. But then the IRA struck back with bombs. The troops, their faces blackened with commando grease, moved in so silently at dawn behind the tanks and columns of six-wheeled armored cars that there was little resistance. Northern Ireland's Secretary William Whitelaw said the British are now in occupation and control throughout Northern Ireland. Whitelaw was asked what he hoped to accomplish.
To protect the whole community and to ensure that the campaign against terrorist action and violence is really effectively pursued. I'm very glad to say that the operation was completely successful. The barricades are all coming down, and what is much more important, it was achieved with a minimal number of casualties. That was what I was so keen to make for certain of.
Official announcements said the only resistance was in Londonderry, where two gunmen were killed, four wounded. There were no military casualties. Londonderry is a main stronghold, which has...
If I were you, I'd see a Ford dealer today.
List better. Build.
Chicago here on the Bill Burke Show for a Monday night. In Newsweek this week, you'll find an interview with the embattled Senator Eagleton by Newsweek's Washington bureau chief, Mel Elfin, an almost minute-by-minute account of the events leading up to Eagleton's selection as vice.
Once again being pushed through the crowd, here he will enter a motorcade, which will take him, as Charles Osgood has told you, through downtown Miami, and then to the Sheraton for Ambassador Hotel, for Ambassador's Hotel, where he will have his headquarters, a hotel which has already been surrounded by a Secret Service cordon and which has had extraordinary security measures taken. Governor Wallace looking lean, considerably thinner than he did before he went into the hospital, looking somewhat more tired, perhaps more weak than he did before he went into the hospital, but certainly much better than he looked in those first early pictures taken in his hospital room immediately after the assassination attempt. Mrs. Wallace walking along, talking to aides as the governor is wheeled around to the side of the car. And from the side of the car, once again, he will be lifted into the car by his aides, a cordon of Secret Service men and friends of the governor standing around so that most people will not be able to witness this little brief ceremony of lifting the governor in and placing him in the seat of the car so that he can make the trip into Miami. The correspondents who have traveled with the governor and who've been with him in the hospital during this period have all, almost without exception, marveled at how well and how strong he has been and how well and how strongly he spoke, both here and in Montgomery, Alabama. Some of us who have not seen the governor during his illness and whose first look this has been at the governor since the assassination attempt perhaps take a minority view. We think that the governor looks considerably weaker, that when he spoke at Montgomery, where he made about a 10-minute speech, he spoke with a softness and a mildness and occasionally with a rather... a convalescent tone to his voice. He sounded not like the old governor, but like a man who is recovering and on his way to being, once again, the old Governor Wallace, but who is not quite there yet. He is still quite an ill man, obviously. Correspondents who were on the plane with the governor talked about his worrying that as he was moved from place to place and as he spoke, he would suffer pains. He has still been suffering pain from time to time, but once again, when he gets out into the crowd and speaks, they say, the pain disappears and he is again a strong, viable candidate. There has been repeated word from unofficial sources around the Wallace headquarters that there is to be a policy statement by Governor Wallace. Presumably what he said in Montgomery does not constitute that policy statement. He certainly said nothing at the airport at Miami that was in any sense a policy statement, merely an expression of warmth and thanks to the people of Florida for their welcome to him and for the kindnesses that they have shown him throughout. So the governor now starts back to his headquarters at the Sheraton Four Ambassadors Hotel, where he will meet with his advisors and plan what action he is to take at this Democratic National Convention here in Miami Beach, what he will say and what he will do. This is George Herman reporting from CBS News Election Headquarters in Miami Beach.
WBBM News Time, 1:54. Why is Coca-Cola in returnable 16-ounce bottles your